ओम शांति। गुड इवनिंग। I welcome you with all my heart. It's good to see you again. It's very commendable on your part that you can be here tonight. After all, you can be watching TV. You can be going out with your girlfriend and boyfriend. You can go to a good movie, you can go get drunk.
What am I doing here?
I don't know. Ask yourself. But you decided to come here. And that means something, not to me, but to yourself. It means that you're tired of the world to an extent. It means that you realize what this world really is. It's not bad, it's not good. It means that you want to wake up. So there's something within you pushing you. All you have to do is to quiet your noisy mind and allow it to happen. That's all. You do not have to go through rituals, initiations, or anything else. You simply have to quiet your mind. And everything will take care of itself. Let me ask you a question. What do you think is the difference between this teaching, Jnana Marga, and the rest of the yogas, prayer, religions, and whatever? What is the basic difference? Who can tell me?
Jnana Marga is not concerned with anything on relative nature, not even calming the mind, really.
Well, no, in a way that's true.
No object?
In a way that's true also. But there's a more rational explanation.
There is nothing to be obtained, yes, to recognize.
Well, that's true too. Actually, the answer I'm looking for is this. In every teaching besides Advaita Vedanta, there's a personal I. Think about that. Let's take Hatha Yoga. The I learns postures, and the ego becomes expanded. Of course, you can say, I can stand on my head and twist my feet. And you give it a Sanskrit name. But you're still saying, I can do this. So the eyes become inflated.
Or it can be, right?
Sure.
Propensity is worth
you know, take Raja Yoga, the eighth limb path. Now these things are good, there's nothing wrong with these things, I'm not putting them down. But there has to be someone to learn the yamas, niyama, the virtues. There's somebody who's learning all these things. I have learned to become virtuous. Take Kundalini Yoga. I am focusing on the chakras, on each chakra. There's always I and I and I. Take prayer. I am praying to God. Again, there's nothing wrong with these things. But the reason we call this the direct path is because this is the only teaching that investigates the I. We're not interested in the effects. Whatever the effect may be, we realize that the I is behind it. We realize that if we find the I and follow it to its source, everything else will be wiped out and will become free. This is why it's called the direct path. Also, what's the difference between meditation and Jnana Marga? Because I mean, most of you realize that in this path it is not really necessary to meditate. So what's the main difference between meditation and this path?
There has to be someone to meditate.
True. But that's not the answer I'm looking for. In meditation, there is always an object of your meditation. And again, the eye is concentrating on certain words, mantra, or whatever. Therefore, you're not getting rid of the eye. You're concentrating on something else, where you exclude everything except that mantra or the words of your meditation. Whether it's God or whatever. In this teaching, you simply inquire for the source of the I. Who am I? Where did I come from? Even when I say to you, where did I come from? Some of you are relating to your body, aren't you? You're thinking, where did I come from as a body? But that's not what we mean. You want to know where the I came from, not where you came from. If you find out where the I came from, you will realize that you do not exist. You never did and you never will. That's the point. Where did I come from? And as you get used to this kind of thinking, whenever you use the word I, you will never refer to your body again. For instance, if you have a cold, you usually say, I have a cold. Only now you will catch yourself. And you will laugh because you will say, I has the cold. Sounds like bad English. I has the cold. It has nothing to do with me. So where did the I come from? It has the cold. And as you follow the I, it will lead you to the source, where there's no I and there's no cold. You can use this method for everything. I am hungry. Well, catch yourself and realize that I is hungry. I is not my real self. I is hungry. Yet my real self can never be hungry. I'm tired. I'm depressed. I'm happy. I feel beautiful. I feel wonderful. It's all the same thing. As long as you're referring to your body, you're making a big mistake. Separate yourself from I. There's only one I, actually. And that I is consciousness. When you follow the personal I to the source, it turns into the universal I, which is consciousness. Begin to catch yourself. Begin to realize your divine nature. And you do this by keeping quiet. The fastest way to realization is to keep silent. Yet you have to know why you are keeping silent. This is why you can't tell this to the average person. If a person has no inkling of Advaita Vedanta, you can't say keep silent. For to them it means just to be quiet. They don't realize it means to go deep, 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 deep within. To that place where absolute reality lives. And that's the silence. Actually, the human body cannot keep silent. There's something else that enters the silence. It has nothing to do with your humanity. It's only after years, perhaps, of meditation in previous lives that you can be mature enough to really know what this path is all about. When I give you these practices, It's not for you as a human being. You appear to be able to go through it as a human being. But I can assure you, your humanity has nothing to do with it. When you enter the silence, you enter a profound peace, bliss consciousness. Pure awareness. That's what the silence is. It's not being quiet. It's beyond that. It's not just quieting your mind, like I say all the time. It's understanding that there's no mind to quiet. When you realize there's no mind, you automatically become silent. When you still think you've got a mind, you make every effort to quiet the mind, and you can't. How many of you believe you can quiet your mind through effort? You can't do that. It's not the effort that makes you quiet your mind. It's the intelligent understanding that you have no mind to begin with. Then you just keep still. And everything takes care of itself. If you have to meditate, by all means meditate. This path is never against any other method, due to the fact they all eventually lead to awakening. You have to do whatever you have to do. But for those who can understand what I'm talking about and realize you're dealing with no mind, no body, no world, no universe, no God, and awakening comes immediately, because there's no one who's sleeping. Do you follow this? If you think you've got something to overcome, if you're going to believe you've got to work on yourself, and you've got to make some kind of effort, it will be hard. After all, who makes the effort? The ego. Who's telling you all these things you've got to overcome? The mind. You think you've got to overcome your bad habits? You've got to overcome past karma. You have to overcome some scars. That's all a lie. I realize I talk about these things sometimes and sound like a contradiction. But I'm sharing with you the highest truth. There are no some scars to overcome because they never existed. There's no karma to overcome because it doesn't exist. was for those immature students to have to work on something. So we explained to them there's karma, there are samskaras, there are latent tendencies that has got a hold of you, and you have to transcend them. Yet I'm telling them a lie. But they really need to hear that at this time of their evolution. Otherwise they couldn't work on anything else. But the truth is, you have nothing to overcome. Think about that. If you had something to overcome, you would never overcome it. For it's the nature of mind to play games with you. As soon as you overcome one thing, another thing pops up. And you have to overcome that. When you overcome that, something else pops up. Say you have a drinking habit. And you say, I've got to overcome this. You may overcome it. It leads to a bad temper. Then you have to overcome the bad temper. It leads to telling lies. Then you have to overcome telling lies. It never ends. Until you begin to realize, I has nothing to overcome. Then you start working on the I. And it's then you finally realize, it's this personal I that's been giving me the trouble. That's an advanced state, but that's also a lie. Due to the fact that personal I never existed. But you don't know that. Because you think the personal I exists, you have to use self-inquiry to lead you to the place where you realize the personal I does not exist. It never has and never will. Yet wouldn't it be wonderful if you can just sit down and realize all this in a flash and become free? We will not allow ourselves to do that for some reason. We want to play the game of overcoming. So we say, I've got to work on myself. I've got to practice. I've got to meditate. I've got to be alone. I've got to do this and I've got to do that. But I say to you tonight, there's no thing you have to do. You just have to realize what I'm saying and awaken. And that's it. Again, who has to awaken? It's all a pack of lies. But I'm using words. How can the self awaken? The self never went to sleep. Do you not realize who you are now? You're not a mortal human. there are no words to express what you are. You have to find out. So you practice. But while you're practicing, your sadhana, keep in back of your mind someplace, there's really no one who practices. After all, who does the practice? It's your body and your mind. If you can only remember, there's no body or mind that exists, then there's no one to practice. So while you're practicing, remember that. I know you're going to walk out tonight and say, well, what do I do now? Look at it this way. As long as you feel body consciousness, and as long as your mind, so-called, still has the power to make you feel this way and that way, then you have to do some practice. Otherwise, your body and mind will control you. The highest practice is Atmavichara, self-inquiry. The reason I'm talking to you like this tonight is because I can feel that all of you that are here have been through many paths, and you're not newcomers, so you're ready for this. You're ready to hear that there's no practice, there's no God, there's no enlightenment, there's no past lives, there's no you, and you're free. People still want to know, when everything is gone, what's left? What is the substratum? The cause. The underlying cause of all existence. There has to be something that holds it all together. Says who? There's nothing to hold together. Remember also that the finite cannot comprehend the infinite. So when I say there's nothing that holds anything together, I mean there's nothing that words can describe. When I use the words like bliss or pure awareness, consciousness, Satchidananda, Para Brahman, and Para Brahman is very powerful because it means beyond Brahman. What can be beyond Brahman? Silence. There's no such thing as Para Brahman. Due to the fact when you think of it, it signifies an object to you. For instance, a place to be in. A place to be in the silence. That is Para Brahman. You're wrong. There's no place, there's no silence, and there's no Para Brahman. Then what is there? Find out. Only you can know yourself. For there are no words to describe it. You have to come to terms with your life. It takes total honesty to do that. You can't go on fooling yourself. Look how you run around from post to post. You go here, you go there. You're always searching, you're always looking, you're always striving. For what? Some of you think that you're going to find a teacher up in the sky someplace. And you're going to go searching for the teacher until you find him or her. No such teacher exists. When you finally settle down and start going into the silence more often, your teacher will appear to you. And you will find he's none other than yourself. You may ask them, what am I doing here with you people? I am yourself. I can see that very clearly. There's no difference between you and me. When you feel depressed, when you feel angry, when you feel all out of sorts, that's me you feel. When you feel happy, when you feel enlightened, when you feel beautiful, that's also me you feel. All this is the self and I am that. Some of you still think I'm talking about Robert. Robert has nothing to do with this. I'm speaking of omnipresence. I'm speaking of no thing. And I think to continue speaking is a waste of time.
Shanti, shanti, shanti. I'm just going to sit here like this. And you can do whatever you like. If you feel like asking a question, ask a question. If you feel like making a statement, make a statement. If you feel like throwing me out the door, feel free to do so.
Purely an academic question. And it's unimportant, but...
Everything is important.
Pardon me?
Everything is important to you.
Okay. Advaita Vedanta, what does the term translate, and where is it from? Who created that term, and when?
The ancient rishis in the Upanishads, they came to the conclusion, and most of them never knew each other, that there's only ultimate oneness. Advaita Vedanta means the oneness of the Vedanta. There's only ultimate oneness. And this was about 4,000 or 5,000 years ago. They handed the teaching down by mouth to mouth, from person to person. Again, the interesting point is, in those days there were many rishis, and it came through them. They just awoke. They became realized. And the message was always the same. The same message we're presenting here. So it's a very old, antiquated teaching.
When that was written down, what was that written down in?
The scriptures, called the Upanishads.
The Vedas is a big body of work, and the Anta, or the end of that, is Vedanta. It's the cream of the Vedic work. A lot of the Vedas deals with other things also.
You spoke of that there was no need for initiation. And I was reading Osborne and a lot of other devotees of Ramana talking about the initiation of Ramana's glance. Mm-hmm. Is that from their perspective, from their imagination, that there was initiation? If they even had a court case that took Ramana to court, one thing that you initiated me is.
Well, this is from their own perspective. They feel that's what happened. Just like many people were in front of Ramana, used to claim he did this for them, he healed them, he saved their lives. He did this and he did that, and he denied everything. But they all claim that because of him, all these things happened. And Yanni is never aware of anything at all, because there's nobody left to do anything. It's like a burnt rope. It's good for nothing.
And Robert, you call that absolute awareness?
I call what?
A burnt rope, like you say. It's absolute awareness?
You can say that.
And there's nothing left. No knowledge, no nothing.
I call what?
A burnt rope, like you say. There's absolute awareness.
You can say that.
Okay, and there's nothing left. No knowledge, no nothing.
Yes.
So is there a state where there is not where there is awareness of the minutest detail?
Is there a state where there's awareness of the minutest detail? In reality, there's no state at all.
And how can it be created? There's
from the perspective of doing practice, would the word
doing what?
Doing practice.
Uh-huh.
Would the words "who is I" be as appropriate as "who am I"?
If it's good for you, it works for you. It's good. Whatever works for you. If you were able to say chocolate bar and you felt something and it worked for you, that would be great.
What does working for me mean aside from feeling good?
It means that to you that means something sacred. It means something wonderful. Something that you want to attain. That's the beginning. And all of that leads to silence. Beyond words and thoughts. It automatically leads you there. That's why I said in the beginning, all methods are good. For instance, if you have a mantra and you believe in the mantra and keep repeating it over and over again, the day will come when the mantra becomes less and less for you and the silence becomes more and more until you drop the mantra altogether. The mantra is only to make you one-pointed, so you can exclude other thoughts. But then the mantra has to go too. With a blow of the nose, you awaken.
What about his question, which I thought a couple weeks ago too, who is I? If I'm saying who is, if there's no small I and there's also no big I, in that sense it doesn't make any difference. But if I'm asking who am I, small, who is I, small I, that is a very different kind of a feeling of a question from asking who am big I.
Yes, due to the fact when you inquire deeply who is I, the I begins to disappear. It turns into the big I, which is pure awareness. So you use that method to lift you up and make you free.
Robert, what if you ask, who am I, and you get confusion, and from that you get fear?
Then you have to ask yourself, to whom does this confusion and fear come from? And realize it comes from me. Then you say, who am I again? Who is this I that feels fear and confusion? And keep still. And the fear and confusion will ultimately disappear. Because it never existed to begin with.
Thank you.
how did this illusion start?
It never did.
Why is it here then?
It doesn't exist. See, that's your perception.
Why do I have perception?
Because you believe you do.
Why do I believe?
That's what you want. It's like when you're hypnotized. You see things that don't exist.
But how do we all get hypnotized to be able to name a butterfly and a snowflake?
We never did. It appears that way. Mm-hmm. But nothing ever happened. I know that answer.
The agreement of illusion is what baffles me.
The what?
The agreement of the illusion between us is doesn't exist either. I mean that.
It baffles you. Then ask yourself, who is baffled? I know some of the answers I give you sound like a cop out. But believe me, it's the highest truth. See, I know some of you want real profound answers. You're looking to talk for a half hour and go into all kinds of technical terms. Why?
Robert, my name is Richard.
Hi, Richard.
I want to thank you for allowing me into your home.
You're welcome.
I've been on a spiritual quest for many years. And something is happening with me, and I feel to me in the past 2 or 3 months from a certain individual, my living situation. And, although I've been coming here briefly, I am using as much as I can what you have talked about and what has entered my heart. But in truth, I do not know how to deal with my pain and my stress. And unfortunately, the reality is that my body hurts and my head hurts at times, and I become nauseous from the unpleasantness that, well, what I call my current reality of my life. And I know many things are illusion, but it is very hard for me to dismiss, to override what I am actually going through. And that's where I'm at right now.
I understand perfectly what you're saying. And I have great compassion for you. But look at it this way. What's the worst thing that can possibly happen to you? Is there really anything to fear? What's the worst thing that can happen?
You see, it's not that I even fear death so much anymore, but it's like I just don't want my life. I just turned 55 in January, and to be very truthful, I have now 19 months and 11 days of not using any mind-altering substances, including pretty much caffeine now. And I feel like I'm being reborn and things aren't bailing me over like substances that I have used for 35 years. And I don't want my life to have been in vain. I've been going for my realization for a long time. And I come here tonight, I swear like this is the first peace that I have felt in a long time.
Everything will work out for you.
Excuse me?
Everything will work out.
I keep hoping that. I really do, and I have flashes and moments that it's okay, you know? And then something happens and I am downward spiral time. And sometimes I really fear for myself. A long time I feared for my sanity. And I just gotta keep remembering that God doesn't give me any more than I can handle, and I just keep hanging in there.
Try to remember the one who is concerned is your body. It is your mind telling you all these things. But in truth, what difference does it make? What can really happen to you? Nothing. Look at me, for instance. I'm good for nothing. I have no visible means of support. I'm not worth anything. I've accomplished nothing in this life. So that's wonderful. What I'm trying to say is you're probably better off than most people. All is well. You'll be okay.
Robert?
Hello.
You have mentioned you have a lot of compassion. If somebody says, I have compassion, does that mean that should have an influence, or is it just an empty word? Or should real compassion have some deep meaning that there could be something done about the dilemmas of life?
You can take it any way you like.
Here's something interesting. There's a guy in the war, and he's being interviewed or something, and he's in the 1st Battalion where they're going to start ground war. And he says, preparing for a battle, he feared would make the Southern California gang wars he grew up with seem like a schoolyard shuffle. And then he's quoted, if old JC up in the sky pulls my card, there's nothing I can do about it, is there?
That's good. If I could only make you understand that it makes no difference what the body goes through. If Saddam was saying, tie me to the rack and cut off my fingers and my toes and poked out my eyes, what can I do? What difference does it make? I am not that. It is the ego that makes us feel sorry about ourselves and our lot in life. Always remember, there's always somebody worse off than you. No thing is ever that bad. Rejoice. For those of you who still don't know, we're having an Easter celebration the last Sunday of the month at 6 o'clock. We're going to have Indian music and other music and have a lot of fun. So feel free to come. But bring something to eat for at least 30 people. The last Sunday of the month, whatever it is.
Are you going to have regular satsang at 2 o'clock first?
No, we'll have a satsang at 6.
Oh, at 6. Oh,
okay. And we'll give people a chance to be with their families during the day.
So then we'll be eating after that?
We'll be eating after the satsang. And then we'll have music and tell 30 jokes. I noticed that nobody checks with Henry anymore when I do something in his house.
Who's Henry?
That got checked out last week. It's old hat now.
Henry is very kind to allow us to wreck his house like this.
Robert, when we meditate, is there a way to avoid hypnotizing oneself rather than being in awareness?
Well, sure. You simply use the method of your meditation to bring you to the place where you're not hypnotized. What makes you think you're being hypnotized?
I seem to lose the time. I lose awareness. I am quiet. It seems to me that my mind might be going on, but I don't even know it.
Well, what makes you think that you're hypnotized? You're probably going deeper into yourself.
I don't really know what hypnotism is, but this occurred to me.
Well, you're better off if you don't know.
But it felt as if I might just really have been asleep.
That's good. Even if you're asleep, the work is carried on while you're sleeping. And when you wake up, it will continue. You're definitely not being hypnotized. Don't even think of that. You might ask yourself, who believes she's being hypnotized? And you will come to realize it's your ego that makes you think that. Yet in reality, that's not happening. But every time you feel that that's true, that you're being hypnotized, ask yourself who is being hypnotized. And you'll realize it's only for the ego, and not for you. And you'll go beyond it.
Yeah, there are other techniques that will bring in a state of, I think it's called Leia.
Yeah.
That you seem to be in a place of peace, but all the tendencies are still there. You haven't cleared them out yet.
Hmm. you'll know, because you will feel a bliss. You will feel a joy that you never felt before. You'll know. There's quite a difference. It's like being asleep and being conscious. When you get into a real yin state, you're consciously asleep. You are aware, but not of the world. And you will know.
Who will know?
Hmm?
Who will know?
You will know.
Who?
You.
Who would I be?
Whoever you want to be. Whoever you think you are.
Robert, does momentum count?
Does what count?
Momentum. I mean, if you keep this up, I mean, does it seem to reach a critical mass? Or I have a feeling like it, you know, like comes to on a regular basis or mistakes, it seems to build up some sense of momentum where the thought is, if I didn't, it would sort of lose it.
In a way, that's true. In a way, it's not. If you're speaking of realization, it's like when you're in a room filled with darkness and you trip over the furniture and you can't see where you're walking. So you finally figure out where the furniture is and you miss a few pieces, but once in a while you bump into it. But then one day your hand accidentally puts on the light switch and the light comes on and the darkness has been dissipated. It'll never be dark again. That's how it works. You bump into things spiritually. You have a few small awakenings. Little things happen. But when it really happens, it's like turning on the light. It happens all at once, and you're free. Excuse me?
Can it happen like a sunrise? Gradual dawning and then finally the sun.
The real awakening comes when the sun is in its full glory. But there appears to be slight awakenings like the sunrise sometimes. But the real awakening comes all at once.
And you know when that happens?
Don't worry.
Don't worry.
Robert, you said you feel no pain. Does that mean you also don't really enjoy a hot shower either?
No, I didn't say I feel no pain. I said it doesn't matter. I like a hot shower also.
It's not too hot. That's why it's called rest.
Huh?
It's an experience. It's not a concept to believe or not believe. That's why you can't grasp it. How can you grasp it? You just experience it.
The hot shower?
And everything else.
Don't make the shower too hot.
As hot as you can stand, it's the best way. We all know that.
I know. When you have hot water, you hold that
too. I never take a shower as hot as I can stand it.
Do you like a hot shower, but it doesn't matter? Is that the idea?
No, I don't take a hot shower.
You don't take a hot shower?
I take a medium shower between hot and cold.
You like a medium shower, but it doesn't matter? Would that be correct?
I get wet.
I didn't understand your words.
I never thought about it, whether I like it or not.
Well, I really want to know about the pain business. Actually, the shower, I was just going to... The pain doesn't matter. Do you dislike pain?
Do I dislike pain?
Yes.
Why would I like pain?
You may not. That's what I was just trying to find out. It seemed like you said you liked the shower. You said you liked some kind of shower. And it seemed
medium.
You got this liking for medium showers. Now, is there any liking?
Everybody for medium.
Is there any liking or disliking for pain?
Pain is the same thing, medium. I don't feel as much as the average person walking in self pain. If that's what you mean.
Robert, so you're never asleep, right?
I'm never asleep?
Yeah.
I'm asleep, but I'm aware I'm asleep.
Awareness?
I sleep about 3 hours a night.
But you're still aware when you're in those three
I'm
hours?
I'm always aware, no.
So what are you doing in those 3 hours?
Nothing. The same thing I'm doing now. What do you want me to do?
Do you dream?
Hardly.
So when you're aware, is the awareness the same as it is when you're not sleeping?
It's always the same.
Are your dreams good, if you have dreams, ever? Or are they, is there any...
Well, the last time I had something like that, it was more like a vision. But then there has to be somebody to have a vision. When I was flying through the air, and I went to Arunachala, the mountain, in Tiruvannamalai, by Ramana Ashram, and I went into the mountain, it was hollow on the side, and inside there was Shiva and Ramana and Vishnu and Krishna and Jesus and more people didn't recognize, Moses. We all smiled at each other and we walked toward each other and we became one beam of light which turned into a lingam. And that's it. And that was a couple of years ago.
I didn't hear the beam of light turned into a heart.
A lingam.
So is there any truth to the power of a lingam?
If you believe in it.
A nice dream.
Could be worse.
Well, when you woke up, quote unquote, woke up in the morning, did you then know? Because you knew you were having the dream while you were having the dream.
I was aware of the whole thing, yeah.
The body then goes to sleep nightly, lies down in bed and conks out. But you never go to sleep.
The body doesn't really conk out. The body just rests.
And you're observing the resting?
I'm observing the resting, yes. some of you only come on Thursday night. I'm not aware that we've got transcripts of some of these lessons. And we have lesson 1 to 5. You're free of charge. Well, they're going to be free from now on. The fellow prints them up. He must have left trouble, so he was charging for them. So I told him not to do that. I think the way we should do it is when we get some of these lessons, some of us should make copies, like 5 or 10 copies each, and hand them out to each other. That would be the best way. So Ed doesn't have to make 200 copies by himself.
Yeah,
Robert, if somebody goes to the satsangs and doesn't understand English,
it doesn't really matter. As long as they're here, that's what matters. Satsang transcends language.
Probably better off.
You're right.
I'll just sort of fall asleep when you're talking. Does that make any difference? Or like sleeping in church, does it make any difference?
It doesn't really make any difference, no. There's a very subtle vibration in the satsang. It goes into your heart, whether you're sleeping or whatever you're doing. As a matter of fact, if I remember correctly, before we came to Henry's house, we used to have a guy who came to satsang, and he'd lie down on the floor, stretch out, and go to sleep. And he always used to tell me that he felt the best he's ever felt in his life. He seemed to have made the most progress than anybody else.
there seems to be a difference between extending Thursday night. It seems like, for me anyway, Thursday night seems to be a little deeper. Is that just my perception?
Well, nothing is on purpose. Maybe because there's no music Thursday night.
Maybe there's less new people.
Could be.
It's
what?
Dark.
Sorry.
And we're tired from working all week.
Less resistant.
How deep can you get in?
When you say it's important to be here and that it's not a matter of language, we could be sleeping or not understand the language, it would be equally beneficial to walk down the street with you, right?
If that's what you believe.
What if I had satsang with a person, with another person who wasn't realized? I mean, what if we both just sat there and tried? What is it about it that makes? Is it that we're open to it, or is it that there's a vibration coming that we're getting, or what is it that makes it beneficial, even if we don't comprehend the language?
Apparently, what they say in the scriptures is a person who's realized has a very positive influence on others. It's like a light bulb. The average light bulb can be 25 volts or watts. But then you put in 100 watt light bulb and you get a brighter light. So the more realized a person is, the more watts he has. And so the people around them feel the illumination. And they also become illuminated. So satsang is about 1,000-watt light bulb. And those of you who are 20 watts or 30 watts or 40 watts, increase your wattage by being here. Speaking of wattage, Alan Watts is on the radio, do you know that?
Mm.
Yeah.
Every Monday at 2 o'clock on Pacifica. Mm.
Amazing speaker. Mm.
Did you know him?
No.
I knew him well. He used to come here and have parties here.
Really?
Yeah, this is one of his party places.
Mm. I heard he was quite a party girl.
Oh, he was.
His girlfriend was my roommate.
Yeah? Give us the lowdown, the skeleton. He was a great entertainer.
He was.
Yeah. And that's how he looked at himself, as an entertainer.
Yes, I know.
No pretensions at all.
I know. That's true.
Mm-hmm. So that's great. That's
he was very down to earth.
Mm-hmm. You never claimed to be a
now that's a backhanded never. Compliment.
What's the best way to give thank you to Ajani, Robert?
the best way to say thank you to a yoni?
Yes.
By losing your ego.
Bravo.
Graduation.
Summa cum laude.
Summa cum ego.
Summa no ego. End of ego.
That's a good point, Hari. Being devotional, you give up your ego to the yoni. As if you're praying to God, you say, take my ego, God. I no longer want it.
But in what sense does the yoni care, one way or the other?
The yoni is just an instrument to relieve you of your ego. There's a sort of a contradiction, you're right, because there's a lot of love and a lot of compassion. Never believe that I don't care. A yoni usually cares more than anybody else on earth. But it's different.
I guess you talk so much about the it just gives a person an image of that suddenly you would be filled with joy as if you hadn't been the moment before, and so it's it suggests this variation in your moods or feelings or fullness or that doesn't, but of course you would have that.
You say that a yoni cares more than anybody on earth, but it's different.
Mm.
How is it different?
It's different because it's a universal care. A yoni sees you as the infinite, sees you as already being realized. So a yoni has a great compassion, a great joy, because he sees you as himself.
Or like nosy.
Same thing. So, yeah.
Is that his exercise of some thing of his personal eye, or is
no? There's no personal eye involved.
This is the self.
The self.
Exercising through a human being.
There's only one self. There's no human being. There's one self, and I am that. When I say I am, I'm not saying Robert. I am. Consciousness is that. The one self.
But that one self does appear to operate through a body mind.
That's how it appears, yeah.
That particular body mind.
In a way that,
if you say so.
What do you say?
Who am I?
I don't know.
Nor do I.
Okay. That ends it.
If you don't know, I sure don't know.
But in a way, the yoni couldn't really have any compassion or any relationship because there wouldn't, relationship implies two. I mean, there's just.
There's a thin line when you talk about that. Because there's a relationship. And yet there's not a relationship. On one level there's a relationship. On another level there's not. But if there's a relationship, it's because you need it. So there's a relationship.
I on the highest level, there is no relation.
True.
You could just as easily say, oh, there is this relationship, it seems, because it's all unthinkable to the mind. It's beyond.
You can say that. You already said it.
I did, didn't I?
Thank you.